Where do preachers get their paychecks from? Does it come right out of the offering plate after some is taken out to pay the electric bill? The Christian faith teaches that ministers deserve a living wage from those they serve. Still, there's a big but to that question. Welcome to the Voice of Prophecy. This is Lonnie Melashenko. Join us today as we search for ways to make this a better world and prepare for the world to come.
Hello, this is Kenneth Richards, welcoming each of you to a new Monday broadcast and a thought-provoking radio series entitled, Does Reverend Moon Deserve to Be a Millionaire? What does the Bible teach about where preachers should get their income? If you get the feeling the answer to that question might dip into your pocket, you're right. Which is why we're also sharing a beautiful Christian booklet entitled Managing Your Resources. I'll have details on that very shortly, but right now let's get to our time of Bible study in the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Here's our host, Lonnie Melashenko, with today's message, A Sale on Pope on a Rope Soap. Lonnie?
Thanks, Kenneth. It's a bit of a barbed question, isn't it? Does Reverend Moon deserve to be a millionaire? There's no denying that he is a millionaire. In fact, many times over. The Washington Times newspaper, owned by the Unification Church, has received church subsidies for years that equal or exceed $25 million annually. And so the question has to be asked, for the preaching that he does, for the kind of spiritual services the Reverend Sun Myung Moon renders to his followers, is it appropriate for organized religion to generate funds that accrue to him? That's the question proposed by this always controversial book of 1 Corinthians. As we buckle on our shields of courage and begin marching through chapter 9 now, the question of Christian economics comes front and center. Is it appropriate for the Apostle Paul to make a living being a preacher? Is he owed a living wage by the people he's converted? Could he or should he set up a little toll booth right outside the baptismal tank and make every candidate for the kingdom slip 50 drachmas through the money slot before they can be saved? And for Paul and Barnabas and others like them, the question's very down to earth. In fact, it's a matter of survival. Here's verse 4. Don't we have the right to food and drink? Don't we have the right to take a believing wife along with us, as do the other apostles and the Lord's brothers in Cephas or Peter? Or is it only I and Barnabas who must work for a living? Work at a secular pursuit, that is. What do you think about that? Should the Christian church be run as a business that generates salaries? And beyond that, should it be a multi-billion dollar enterprise, a Fortune 500 bonanza for those entrepreneurs who know how to praise the Lord and pass the offering plate? These are complicated questions, aren't they? Certainly the business of the Christian faith serves many legitimate and wonderful needs. Why, just within my own Adventist denomination here in North America, the spiritual needs of members keep two thriving publishing companies in operation. Several hundred good Christians make a fair, not exorbitant, living working there. Multiplied millions of books, magazines, Bible study tools, CD-ROMs, concordances, Christian games, children's devotional materials and gospel music come flooding out of Nampa, Idaho, and Hagerstown, Maryland. And grateful Christians buy them. Some of you listeners have received gift books that were printed there. It's a system that serves everyone well, but is that appropriate? On the other hand, friend, there are people who see a gold mine here, an opportunity that looms higher than Mount Sinai. Without really caring about the gospel itself, they cash in on the demand and gladly pocket the proceeds for themselves. Now, no one's held up, no one's coerced to buy, but they use the existence of Christianity as their means of survival and even prosperity. Some of the glossy four-color Christian catalogs are 300 pages thick, packed with merchandise, toll-free numbers, and order forms where you can use your Visa card. And perhaps in the harmless and amusing category, we can even notice how at major gatherings, like a papal visit, there will be cheerful entrepreneurs who sell John Paul II t-shirts, styrofoam miters, periscopes for those sitting in the back row at the Dodger Stadium Mass, and even Pope on a Rope soap. My friend, listen, all this week, we'd like to consider some of the principles that are involved in what we'll openly call Christian business. Who should get salaries? Should a ministry like the Voice of Prophecy accept donations, use the bulk of the money to produce programs and buy airtime, and then also provide paychecks for the 15 or so people who work here? Now, some sacrificing widow mails in $10 out of her Social Security, and friends, sometimes that money goes into my paycheck. I'll openly confess that this is how we operate, out of necessity. Now, is it right or wrong? Is there a better way? Back in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul actually poses a question. Would people prefer that he work at a regular job for a living in order to buy food and clothes and a bed to sleep in, and then just preach in his spare moments? Back in Acts chapter 18, to be specific, we can read how while in Corinth, Paul stayed with a Jew named Aquila and his wife Priscilla. Now, this was a couple who emigrated from Rome, Italy, after Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave. And all three of these Christians supported themselves as tent makers. Paul made a living sewing tents. And then in verse 4, we read that he preached on Sabbath in the synagogue, trying to persuade Jews and Greeks to accept the Christian faith. So that was one option. But there was another way. And here in the chapter we're studying right now, this is what Paul asks. Was it possible that these new believers were so excited about the gospel, so impassioned in their desire to have others know the same beautiful truths, that they would want Paul to pour all of his energies into preaching and proclaiming the Christian faith? And were they willing to fund him in these efforts? Now, that's really what it boiled down to. Let me lay a little illustration on you. Did you know that if you signed up right now, today, as a private in the United States Army, you would immediately begin to receive as pay the handsome sum of $809.10? That's before basic training and all the push-ups and rope climbing even. Your very first month in the Army, you get that $809.10 plus food and uniforms and housing and all the other benefits. In fact, even here in the Bible, in this very chapter, Paul poses the question, who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Now, why? Why is it that we don't ask our soldiers to make their own living as auto mechanics and department store clerks and Taco Bell attendants and brain surgeons and then just volunteer a few spare hours when they can in order to defend our country? Well, perhaps you remember in history how it's generally gone when we tried that approach. Back during the American Revolutionary War, especially in the early stages around 1775, George Washington had himself an army of somewhere between 13,000 and 17,000 men. But, as you read about it, most of these guys literally came and went at will. Every morning at Reveille, General Washington didn't have any idea who might show up for roll call because these men still had to make a living and get the crops in and run the family store. The British, on the other hand, not only had a fully paid army, but something like 8,000 German mercenary soldiers. Remember the Hessians? Who were also paid to just be soldiers. These extra men from Hesse-Cassel, Brunswick, and Hesse-Hanau in Germany didn't have to focus on anything but soldiering. Their food and their army cots were provided, and until the fledgling rebels in the colonies decided that liberty was worth funding with a full-time army, why, the redcoats from England had the upper hand. And so you see, the Apostle Paul proposes a Christian principle that's held up pretty well for 2,000 years now. Those who work full-time for God, he says, should be paid a living wage by the very people who benefited from that ministry. People who've been saved by an apostle's ministry, men and women who've discovered the joy of the Christian way of life, have a spiritual obligation to provide the funds, the wages, to protect and perpetuate that person's ministry. You know, I like the blunt assessment of this passage as depicted in the Living Bible. Here's verse 14. Those who preach the gospel should be supported by those who accept it. Period. That's why faithful Christians who are members in a church are glad to contribute voluntarily from their own paychecks so that their pastor and perhaps even a large church staff can keep doing the Lord's work in that church. Your preaching, your ministry, your prayers have blessed us, their actions say every time they put a tithe envelope in the plate. And now we want you to keep blessing us and others. I know that's how I feel about Pastor Tim Garrison and the Camarillo Adventist Church. You know, I'm glad there have been those who felt that way about my Paradise, California Adventist Church and about the Voice of Prophecy radio ministry. More about that later. In our last few moments today, let me reminisce with you about a couple of birth anniversaries that have meaning here on Monday, October 28th. Jonas Salk, who invented the vaccine for poliomyelitis, would have been 82 years old today. And Olympic athlete and decathlon champion Bruce Jenner turns 47 today. My friend, I'm glad that the University of Pittsburgh gave Dr. Salk a salary as head of the virus research laboratory. Here, professor, they must have told him, we'll pay you to think and do medical research. Don't get a job mowing lawns in order to feed your family. We want all your creative energies to be unleashed in this most important direction. And after he discovered that vaccine, wise people made him the director of the Salk Institute for Biological Studies in San Diego, so he could keep on looking for medical breakthroughs until his death just a year ago. In 1976, Bruce Jenner scored 8,617 points in the Summer Games in Montreal, bringing a decathlon gold medal to the United States. How much did friends and supporters and the government help him financially so that he could concentrate on training instead of on earning a living? Certainly there's more of that here in 1996 than even 20 years ago, but more and more all countries and lovers of sports want to give the best athletes the opportunity to give their most diligent energies to Olympic excellence. Here, they say, we'll feed you and clothe you and provide for your physical needs. You just train. Your success will be our success, too. And so a preacher named Paul asks us, do we care that much about the success of our spiritual quest?
It's a probing question, Lonnie, and it helps us to reorder our priorities. Friend, we'd like to mail you a gift copy of the discovery booklet, Managing Your Resources by Lori Herr. For your free copy of Managing Your Resources, you can write us at the Voice of Prophecy, Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. That's Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. Our Canadian address is Box 2127, Oshawa, Ontario, L1H7V4. Again, the name of the book is Managing Your Resources. You can also call us toll-free to request your complimentary book at 1-800-872-0055. That's 1-800-872-0055. Lonnie?
Tomorrow we'll openly discuss how much should people like preachers make. Here's our title, Bugged by the Preacher's VW. I hope you'll join us. Till then, Lonnie Milashenko reminding you it's always true. God loves you.
Like the Apostle Paul, some people find such joy in their work, they're amazed there might ever be a paycheck. Back in the 1920s, golfer Harvey Pennock bought a red spiral notebook, and for decades he collected his stories about birdies and sand traps and miracle shots. After 70 years, he happened to show it to a local writer. "You think it's worth publishing?" "I'll check," the man promised. The next day he called and told the aging golfer's wife that Simon and Schuster had agreed to an advance of $90,000. The next time they met, the old man seemed discouraged. "What's the matter?" the writer asked. Reluctantly, Pennock admitted that with the medical bills, there was no way he could come up with the 90 grand. "You've got it all wrong," the writer exclaimed. "They'll give you the money. You're going to be rich." And Harvey Pennock's Little Red Book, followed by And If You Play Golf, You'll Be My Friend, went on to sell a combined 2 million copies. Doing what you love and getting paid. The Apostle Paul and Harvey Pennock both died as happy men. For the Voice of Prophecy, I'm Lance Liebelt.